Hey, you guys, it's the movie retrospective. Going back to the 1970s for this one. A movie that maybe if you were just kind of watching it, you weren't really paying attention, that you might think was a Hammer movie. But no, it's not a Hammer movie. It's actually from their sort of rival studio, Amicus.
It's a pretty good movie.
And this is called And Now the Screaming Starts. Sometimes with a exclamation point, sometimes without.
It still delivers like a Hammer film, good-looking European girls, boobs, boob fest. Although it's not multiple boobs in this
It's
one.
just
It's
one
just
lady's
mostly
boobs.
one boobs, yeah.
And
Look,
one
actually,
woman's
no.
ass. One woman's
Yeah,
ass.
she was, and she was kind of big fine for her time too. She was cute.
She was big fine.
For her time, yeah. The dudes that were going to abuse her said something like, called her buxom, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, just buxom. Yeah, it was a good flick. It's kind of like it's almost kind of like I said, like a British Hammer horror film take on kind of like The Hand. If you saw the Michael Caine movie, The Hand, it seems to be that, but there's more to it than that. There's curses and fucking ghosts and shit involved in it.
Ghost rape.
Yeah, there's all kinds of weird stuff and vengeance
Everyone's
and
like, ghost
stuff.
rape. Now you've got my
Yeah,
attention.
it's pretty good. It's a pretty good movie. One of the things I liked about this movie versus, say, like a Hammer film. A Hammer film, I think, was more of a grand production, a lot more sexual, really, when you really get down to it. The Hammer
Yeah.
films, all right. But what I liked about this movie is that it was not dialogue driven. It was a visual film. It was very, visual. It had dialogue in it, but it was mostly about, visuality, if
Yeah.
that's a word.
Visualization,
Yeah.
visual or
Well, no,
something.
it was just, it was showing, not telling. You know what I'm talking about
Yeah.
there.
I mean, they had to have more dialogue toward the end as they were
Right.
like explaining the mystery and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, so this came out in 1973. Its main title that it's usually known by is And Now the Screaming Starts, but it's also known as Fenn-Griffin or Bride of Fenn-Griffin. I guess the novel that it was based on was called Fenn-Griffin. It was by David Case. So
That title makes more sense, actually.
it does. There is a lot of screaming in this movie, I will say, but
Yeah, but that's awful vague. That sounds like something the Italians would call their movie.
it really does sound
Yeah.
like that. Now, like I said, this is an interesting movie because, as I said, this is not Hammer. It's actually Amicus. And if you know anything about British horror, Amicus, what they usually did was one, they were primarily known for doing anthology or quote unquote portmanteau movies, like horror anthologies. And almost all of their movies were had contemporary settings, whereas Hammer was more known for their gothic stuff. So this was a very unusual Amicus film in the sense that it is one, full length film rather than an anthology, and it's also set in the gothic time period. So you can kind of see that Amicus, I think at this point, like night early 1970s, I think even Hammer was starting to have like diminishing returns on a lot of their movies because their movies were kind of going out of fashion. And you could see that like the Hammer ones in the early 1970s, they even tried to do more like gothic stuff, but in a more contemporary setting, like Dracula 80, 1970, or so, where the monsters were coming to
Modern era.
groovy modern era,
Yeah.
and what was then modern. So it was very strange of Amicus to kind of want to go back to, I believe this is set in the 1700s.
Well, no, both 1700 and 1800s. Remember, because it takes place across a couple generations.
Like two or three, I think it's
Right.
like a 50-year like time
Right.
span.
So it ended up in the 1800s according to what they were wearing.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, so
Yeah.
yeah, because when I was watching it, I couldn't figure out what time period it was because I'm like, it's a time period you don't often see. Like the costuming was a little strange,
I
but
believe it ends in the early 1800s.
yeah, because I think that
Yeah.
initially I think it was set in supposed to be set in 1795, maybe
Yeah.
something like that. But yeah, so the thing about Amicus and Hammer, I don't like I said, I hate to call them rivals necessarily because they borrowed a lot of the same directors and same actors and stuff. Peter Cushing is in this, and it was directed by Roy Ward Baker, who did a bunch of Hammer movies. He did Quatermass in the Pit. He did and then he did a bunch of Amicus ones too. He did Asylum. He did Vault of Horror. He did all that kind of stuff. So they borrowed back and forth a lot. So the interesting thing about this too is that when I first saw it, like when I saw the house, like Fenn-Griffin Manor or whatever the fuck it's called in the movie, I was like, God damn, there's that fucking house again, because that's in like so many movies. That is an actually, well, I looked it up and it's like a pretty famous house in the UK. It's called Oakley Court. It's a hotel now, but I guess when Hammer first started out in 1949, that was like their headquarters for a year or two, and they did like some live productions there. They shot a bunch of their movies there. Also, where I recognize it from? Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
That was like Dr. Frankenfurter's Castle in Rocky Horror Picture Show. All right. So, and like I said, this has a lot of the same actors. It says, Stephanie Beecham's in it. Patrick McGee is in it. So there's a lot of, Amicus players and Hammer players as well, like in this movie. So, all right. So let's talk a little bit about the story of this, because this one's kind of a weird one. So this woman who is, her name's Catherine, and she's just married this, upper class twit type dude, Charles Fengriffin, and they're going back to his, palatial estate or whatever. And pretty much from the jump, it does seem like it's really funny because, like, literally, like, 2 minutes after the movie starts, I was like, boobs, Tom, boobs.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. Like, that's the thing, man.
I missed it.
That's the thing, man. The British studios were, it's obvious to me that they knew exactly why people were coming to see these movies. They had to get asses in the seats.
Yeah.
All right. They were horror movies. They had good-looking people, both male and female, in the damn movies, in these badass costumes. The women were, of course, they were fucking sexy. It was boob fest, all right? And there were sexual undertones and overtones. I mean, I would think that the Hammer films were a little more intense to this. This is a good movie, but the Hammer ones were a little more intense. It was more women, all of them real good-looking, more boobs. More sex. I mean, they're getting down to with Carmilla, the lesbian vampires and shit like that. It's just like, yeah. I mean, they weren't softcore porn, but they were sexual.
They were a little racy for the day.
Yeah, they stayed, it was 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
They could get away with all kinds of stuff. Sexual revolution stuff. And so people went and saw them. They were good.
I feel like Hammers were a slightly gorier as well.
Yeah.
The Amicus ones tended to be a little less gory.
Yeah. Women were going to see it because there's an element of romance to them. They were stylish looking, stylish sets and stuff. They were sexy. Guys were seeing them because the horror, the blood, the fucking boobs and fucking, they were good stories. They were just good stories.
Yeah.
I couldn't see why they went out of fashion, but they were good stories. They kind of can come back around in fashion. They're gothic.
Yeah, and I feel like probably 10 years ago or something like that, they had a little bit of a gothic mini resurgence. Yeah. You had there was a remake of The Woman in Black. They did Crimson Peak. They did all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of, and look at fucking Twilight and shit like that. That's kind of like a gothic story too. So,
So far, I haven't seen them all, but so far I like the Carmilla one the best.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite as well. I don't know. It's hard to pick. I haven't seen all of them, but I have seen a lot of the Hammer and Amicus movies.
Yeah. Carmilla one was pretty sexy.
Who doesn't love lesbian vampires? Come on now.
Yeah, and it was nothing but just good looking women and men trying to stop this lesbianism.
And everyone watching is like, no, don't stop it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why are you trying to stop it? What's the matter?
Yeah.
Right?
Just fucking fine.
I know. So, all right. So Catherine marries this dude, Charles Fengriffin, and they go to his, family's estate or whatever. And actually, they get married there, don't they? Because they show, briefly at the beginning. Now, pretty much immediately, she's kind of wandering through the portrait gallery, and he's like, and this is my great-great-grandfather, this person, and this is my grave. And she's like, oh, fascinating, pretending she's interested. So, So then she sees this one painting in particular of this dude. He doesn't look super sinister or anything in particular, but she just really, really does not like this portrait at all, and she's kind of like mesmerized by it. And then all of a sudden, jump scare, this big fucking bloody hand pops out of the painting, and I was like, oh, nice one. I wasn't expecting that. Okay. Now that particular night, I guess that she's waiting in her room for the wedding night lovin' or whatever. And the husband is going to his quarters to do whatever it is he has to do, before this all can be consummated or whatever. And so while she's in there, she gets all her little nightie on and fixes her hair and everything. And she, gets in the bed. And then all of a sudden, because they've showed, prior to this, there's, a little severed hand kind of, walking around, thing in the Addams Family. It's actually not bad for 1973.
Looks good. Yeah.
I mean, you can tell that it's, a mechanical hand, but it still looks, the outside looks pretty good. It's like a little severed hand going,
Yeah, and the font and everything. I like the font for the fucking credits. They had that 70s. It's the same font from Excalibur. And it does kind of feel like it's from that same era of the movie Excalibur.
Which even though was. Excalibur didn't come out until 1981.
No, I thought it was late 70s. I thought it was more like 78, 79.
I'm pretty sure it was 81.
It still looked about the...
The 81 was still 70s,
It was still 70s, fair. Yeah.
The font that they used for this movie, I told them, I was like, that is the entire decade in the 1970s in one particular font. I feel like they used that for everything.
Yeah. That was their mystical Celtic font.
It was, So it's like everybody uses that. So every time I fucking see that,
some mystical shit didn't really happen.
It is, right? Yeah. So you've seen this little, like, kind of severed hand, like, scooting around, like I said, like, thing from the Addams Family. So she's in the bedroom, and all of a sudden, the severed hand, it looks like the severed hand, like, smacks, like, is over her mouth, right? And then there's like a stump, like an arm stump, that's like holding her down. And then it's implied that she's raped by a ghost.
Yeah. And then what's funny is that every time one of these paranormal events happens, she starts screaming. And when the dudes show up, there's nothing there.
And they're like, oh, and she's obviously like, crazy.
It's
pants.
A woman. Yeah, it's a woman. The women don't know what they're seeing. It goes to that trope again.
I felt for this poor woman. Because the thing about Catherine in this movie, so it's like every time she knows pretty much immediately, because like I said, the night she gets to the house and sees this weird ass painting with the hand popping out, and then she gets raped by a ghost for fuck's sake, like the first night.
Yeah.
And then her husband's like, what are you screaming about? And she was just like, okay, so it's gone now, whatever.
Yeah. Women don't know reality.
Right. And then when her, even though she just got raped by a ghost, then her husband's still expecting, like, oh, it's wedding night sex. She's like, okay, I got to go through with this now, even though I just got raped by a ghost, but he doesn't believe her, right?
Yeah.
So it's like then, while they're getting down, then she looks out the window and sees a dude out there with no eyes.
Yeah, ghost with no eyes.
Yeah, he's like those big bloody sockets and shit like that. You know, she's like, well, that put me right
out of the room, right? Women, you know, they just see things.
They're just
seeing things.
I just constantly see shit. I'm seeing shit right now.
Yeah, right. And a man got to come in and
shit. Shit's like fucking flying around.
Men come in, straighten that shit out. You're just seeing things. Why are you screaming?
This is kind of like that trope writ large. Yeah. But the thing about it, it's like the reason it doesn't bother me that much is because the woman always turns out to be right. There really is supernatural shit going on. It's just the men are too dumb to like see it, I guess.
What's funny is that I think that trope kind of played into the stereotype in the paranormal scene that women are more sensitive than men.
Yeah, that's exactly why.
You're getting that from the movies. In the movies, the fucking it's written that way. You know what I mean? For suspense that. To make the woman like she's privy to some secret knowledge, the ghosts are picking on her.
Yeah.
All right. She not crazy. These men are crazy. That's what the story means. These men can't see the truth.
Yeah.
That's really what it is.
I mean, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like I said, it really does go back to that women are more mystical and in tune with like forces that dudes don't understand.
Me and Jenny are always fucking around about, oh, women don't know what they see. Because that's what the man is saying in the thing.
In these movies.
But you know... That's playing into a kind of a feminist stereotype that the men are saying the women are crazy. That's not what the story you're misinterpreting what the story meant. The story means that the men can't see what's really going on. The woman does.
Yeah,
that's what it really means.
Well, yeah, because like I said, the women always are.
Yeah,
right.
They all end up being right. Right. Yeah.
The thing that is okay. So the really frustrating thing about this for the character, and like I said, I really kind of felt the shit because she sees all this crazy shit happening. Obviously, the dude is not seeing any of it. Her husband's not seeing any of it. So she maybe starts to think, well, maybe I'm not. I don't know. But then she's actually got her shit pretty much together because she's like, okay, something weird is going on in this house. My husband knows some weird shit. The servants know this weird shit and no one's telling me. So she gets like really frustrated about it. Now, another thing that happens too is that after the whole ghost rape thing and seeing the creepy dude outside the window with no eyes, she is like farting around on the property, you know, and she finds this little cottage and she goes in there and the dude that lives in there, whose name is Silas, he's a woodsman, and he has this big red birthmark on the side of his face, just like the guy that she saw outside of the window. So I think that seeing that guy and that he's really alive and shit, that was what cemented, hey, look, I'm seeing something. There's something weird going on here and nobody is telling me what it is.
Yeah. What's the name of that actress? Do you remember?
Stephanie Beecham. Yeah, she was in a bunch of Hammer films as well.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, she does a great job, Everybody in these British movies can act. You have to be. It's not like Hollywood, where if you have enough blow, you can be in the movie. It's not like
bring the blow, or blow me,
and you can be in the movie. That's kind of how Hollywood does it. In England, you had to be from the theater. And another thing is, and it's part of this, also a thing about good British movies of this era, and a lot of movies of this era, some of the American ones were like this too. If you were going to be a leading lady, you had to be smoking hot. I mean, they were unabashed about it. You know what I mean? That, yeah, you're in this movie because you can act and you look like a model.
Yeah, titties.
Yeah, yeah. So, because people pay to see good-looking people back then. I think they still do. So... they knew what they were doing, and she's smoking hot. She fits the character.
Yeah, like I said, she was in a shit ton of movies. Probably not just Hammer, but she was in some Hammer, and I think she was in other Amicus.
You know, they were fair. You know, they fucking brought in eye candy for the women too. You know what I mean? They get put macho type dudes, and then you know they understand how kinky certain women are because shit, they're bringing in fucking Peter Cushing, and you know he's a sex symbol.
Yeah,
his skinny fucking with his fucking cheekbones. Women had a thing for that old dude. He looked good.
Well, and the thing about this one,
spooky looking.
He is spooky looking. Yeah, yeah. And I dig that scene.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about it is that in this particular movie, and this is kind of sad, I don't mean to bring everybody down, but in this particular movie, he was like maybe a little bit thinner than usual because his wife had only died like a year something before. And he was still, because I was watching an interview with somebody that worked on the movie, and they said once his wife died, you know, he was still in movies and he still gave his all and everything. But they said he was just really just waiting to die to join her.
Waiting around to die.
That's basically what he said.
Yeah.
He'd lost a lot of weight and he was kind of...
It's insane how skinny that dude was.
He was very skinny.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at that dude, I was like, man, does he have back teeth?
It almost looks like he doesn't.
Yeah.
Because I was looking at him too. I'm like, damn.
He's got teeth in the front. Does he have any teeth in the back and the sides? His cheekbones are just, I mean.
They're like razors.
It's almost kind of like you'd have to damn pay for cosmetic surgery to get cheekbones that much. Now, I know that his arms at the bicep were probably about the diameter of my wrists. I mean, he was a skinny dude. But that was just some badass cheekbones on that man.
I know. He probably had the world's best cheekbones of all
and
time.
And he's a legend in America just from that one role out of fucking Star Wars, him playing fucking General Tarkin.
Yeah.
Fucking, and it just, that dude, perfect for that role. Perfect.
Yeah. He's just, how do you not, like I said, how do you not love Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee, man? It's like, you know what I mean? They're fucking, everybody loves them. Come on. But yeah, so he doesn't turn up until later, but yeah.
Yeah, and
so,
he shows up as the wise dude. He's always the dude who's got to sort shit out. He's intelligent.
I was like,
okay. He's intelligent. Let me fix
That's what shit. I said when the carriage got there, about a third of the way, or two-thirds of the way for the movie. I said, Peter Cushing arrives to sort everything
out. He's going
to
sort this shit out. He'll figure it out. Yeah, because you don't know what the hell's going on,
what
really.
You kinda it's like, that's the thing. And I think that a lot of people... I watched some other reviews of it. There's not a shit ton. This is actually on Shudder at the moment because Shudder just added a bunch of Amicus movies. I also did a review of Asylum, the anthology movie, but that won't be out for a few more weeks. But so it's on Shudder in the U.S. if you want to watch it. But I think that some people complained, oh, it's a little slow, or it was a little... I didn't really find it... I mean, I could see how somebody might think that, but... I didn't really find it all that. I really liked the atmosphere of it. I really liked the mystery because the whole time she keeps seeing this weird shit, like this, you know, this fucking hand crawling around, you know, this fucking eyeless dude popping up. And then other weird shit starts to happen, like I said, because she's pretty sure that her husband and the servants at the house like know about what's going on and are just like fucking with her and like telling you, it's like, oh, you don't see anything, blah blah. So she's getting really frustrated. So you have that whole aspect, and then what starts to happen is that some of her servants start feeling bad for her and are like, okay, well, I'm gonna tell her what's going on. Like, I think the first person that feels bad for her, she goes to see the family solicitor. And he's kind of like, okay, well, I'm not really supposed to tell you. I'm kind of, you know, I'm kind of afraid to, but your husband said not to, but I'll come by tonight and we'll all talk about it together. And then he coincidentally gets like axe murdered on the way to the house that night. And then subsequently, every time someone's going to tell her what the fuck is going on, like one of her servants is going to tell her, and then she gets like fucking strangled by a ghostly severed hand. One of the other servants is going to tell her, and she, you know, but it always like looks like an accident, like, oh, she just fell down the stairs, or she just had a heart attack or whatever. So at this point, she's just like fucking losing it, because she's like, I feel like everybody knows what's going on. Three people that were going to tell me what was going on have died. You know, but with plausible deniability. So the husband's just like, oh, the first guy just got murdered by highwaymen, and the other two were just accidents and natural causes and all this other kind of shit. But you know the whole time that the husband fucking knows what's going on, and he's not coughing it up.
Yeah, he knows something about it. Some of the servants know.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny is that you said that some people say that it's kind of slow, the first part of it. The reason why they're saying that is because there's not a lot of dialogue. It's showing you stuff that's happening, and there's not a lot of explanation, so it seems like it takes a long time. But Hammer did that too.
Yeah.
The difference was that Hammer would have padded that time out with a lot more boobs.
Yeah.
That's what they would have done. They had padded that shit. They had made sure they had all the servant girls with the bustiers and the shit popping up. Fucking the woman would have had a couple more hot friends to always comment, and they had to sit at the tops of the booth popping up out of there.
Little muffin top.
Yeah, yeah. And then it would have been like leaning over the bed to ask her the question, you know. So that would have padded that out, and that's what's missing from this movie. That's why they're saying it's a little bit slow. Hammer would have fucking put a lot more eye candy in that first one third, you know what I mean, first half of the movie would have been a lot more of that, and you wouldn't have noticed it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or at least a dude wouldn't have noticed.
A dude wouldn't have noticed.
Like, all he sees is the dancing boobs across the screen. And like, that keeps him entertained.
The same scenes, it would have been the same shit would have happened, and just some boobs would have been watching it happen and reacting to it to happen. You know what I'm talking about? The boobs react to it. Because, let's be honest, some of those girls in those Hammer movies were there because of their boobs.
Well, yeah.
And they were just, okay, we need you to stand here in the corner when this shit happens, scream, and we'll zoom in on your cleavage. Okay, and then we'll go in, and then they were doing that.
Let's see how the boobs,
Yeah, let's see how the boobs feel about it. They were doing that. It was boob reaction video. The boob. Yeah.
Oh my God, that should be our new channel. My boob react?
Yeah.
To various situations.
That was Hammer's game.
Yeah.
Hammer knew what it was doing, you know.
But yeah.
Okay, this is going to happen. It's going to come through. When we need a servant girl over here to scream, when it's who's got the biggest boobs?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Hike him up a little bit higher. Okay, darling, standing in the corner right here. We get the camera. Action. You know what I mean? And then, so that way, it was just a constant stream of that kind of shit happening.
Yeah.
In a Hammer film. Yeah. That's it was.
Yeah. All right. So, like I said, now every time somebody's trying to tell this poor woman what the fuck is really going on, you know, that person mysteriously dies. Also, you know that Silas, the woodsman, the guy that lives out in the woods with the weird birthmark, he's up to some creepy shit too, because at one point the husband, Charles, like rides out there and is like, hey, I just want you off this land. And he's like, nah, I don't want to leave. Even though the guy's like, hey, I'll give you all this money. You can move to London. You can do whatever you want. I'll give you as much money as you want if you leave, cause you're, you know, making my wife upset. And he's like, nah. So you know that there has to be some kind of, cause he makes these like really weird statements about, you know, the land and about his, father and grandfather and shit like that. So at one stage, if you will remember, Catherine has been raped by a ghost, right? Now, she also had sex with her husband, so, you know, it could go either way. But so they call this doctor, who's played by Patrick McGee, and his name's Dr. Whittle, and he shows up and he's like, oh, guess what, Catherine, you're pregnant. And she's like, oh, fuck me. And, you know, so they're like, okay, well, she's not happy about this. So then Dr. Whittle goes and talks to Charles, and Dr. Whittle knows what the fuck is going on too, but no one is going to tell us and no one is going to tell him, because they're just like, well, don't you think you should tell her now that she's pregnant? You know, this might go badly or whatever. Now, the thing about it too is that finally, you know, she's just like fucking losing her mind because she just knows something's going on and no one's telling her. So at that stage, Charles calls in Peter Cushing to, like I said, sort everything out. Now, he plays like a psychiatrist, I guess. He's supposed to be a psychiatrist named Dr. Pope. And he shows up with his fabulous, fabulous outfits. Holy crap, he's got some great fucking outfits.
And his fucking cheekbones.
And his cheekbones.
Yeah.
His cheekbones will fix everything.
Cheekbones increase your IQ by 40 points instantly. Become a genius. Make you a lot smarter.
Yeah. So Dr. Pope, he comes there and he tries to sort out like what is going on with her. And she tells him about all the dreams she's had and how she thinks everybody knows some information that they're not telling her. And it's upsetting. So he tends to think he's like a man of science and everything. So he doesn't think there's anything supernatural going on. He doesn't think she's crazy, but he just thinks, oh, maybe because she's pregnant or maybe it's all anew. Maybe the stress is just too much for her, whatever. Now, he actually goes to talk to Dr. Whittle, the other doctor, and Dr. Whittle is about to tell Dr. Pope about the shit that's going on, and then Dr. Whittle drops dead. So at this point, Dr. Pope's like, huh, this is really weird. So finally he goes to Charles. The husband is like, look, motherfucker, tell me what the fuck is going on, because everybody's just like dropping dead and this is not cool. And Charles is just kind of like, well, it's just a legend. I didn't think it was true. And he's like, bitch, tell me what the fucking legend is. So what the legend was that Silas, the dude that lives out in the woods, it was his dad, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So his dad also, who's played by the same actor, and he had like the same, you know, the same birthmark and all that other kind of stuff.
It's like a red diamond.
Yeah. It's kind of like what do they call that? A port wine stain or something like that. I think they call it. Yeah. It's like just this red
diamond shape.
Yeah. Right. It's like on the half of his face.
Yeah.
And so Silas's father, whose name was also Silas Sr., we'll call him. He lived in this cottage. He was a woodsman too. And he worked for Charles's grandfather, who was a real piece of shit. So the grandfather, I love the way they put this. He made the castle a site of debauchery. Is that what they said?
Yeah.
It was some pretty mild debauchery, gotta say, at least at first.
He said it was, they said he filled it with the scum of the earth. And then when they showed him, it was just like, oh, regular people.
Poor people.
It was just people that could dance and play. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what we kind of laughed.
We started laughing.
Oh, it's like, oh, it's the peasants. Yeah,
yeah, they were playing drinking games.
Yeah, they were just like drinking.
Singing and fucking having a good time.
Yeah, they weren't like sacrificing babies or nothing like that. It was just, it was pretty mild like partying.
Yeah.
But it actually gets worse from that. That wasn't the whole
Well, that situation. Was a subset of people that went out to go do the crime.
That's true. It wasn't
the general population in there.
Yeah.
Because you had women in there and, you know, the women wouldn't have stood for that, I don't think.
Well, I would hope not. Yeah. But back then, maybe you would have because they'd have fucking slapped your ass around too. But yeah, so.
I don't know. I fucking read some contemporary stuff that happened during those witch trials, and those women were boisterous. They would speak up. But hey, don't do that shit. You know what I mean? But
some of them did,
You know, so
some of them did.
They weren't all shrinking violets.
No,
they had balls back then. Some of them girls.
Yeah. Oh, I know they did.
Yeah.
So the thing about it is that the grandfather, it's like after he's gotten sick of this kind of just like boring debauchery, so he takes like him and some of his like little posse or whatever, and they're like, hey, Silas Senior, the woodsman, he just got married today, so let's go fuck with him a little bit. So then they go out to the woodsman's cottage, and basically before Silas Sr. has even got in the new wife, he's been giving her a bath, they're doing a whole thing.
Polishing up his brand new woman.
Polishing up the brand new woman.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
And she's cute.
Yeah, her name's Sarah, right?
Yeah, she's real cute. Kind of like a short, stocky Barbie Benton.
That's what she kind of looked like.
Now, I don't want to say short side, but just Barbie Benton was tall.
Yeah, she wasn't. I mean, I didn't find her. She's not like.
No, 5'5". She's 5'4".
Yeah.
But she was kind of. You know, she was supposed to be a farm girl, so she was supposed to be kind of strong.
Yeah.
Stocky.
A little sturdy.
But shapely.
Yeah.
She's
a sturdy girl.
Yeah, what would they call that? They would call it. Never mind. They'd have called it a. Porn would have called it a pog. That ass wagon.
He knows
all the terminology.
He knows all the porn.
I'm not a terminology.
Yeah, so
this is Florida, goddamn.
So Charles Fen Griffin's grandpa and his little gang of miscreants bust into this cottage before Silas has even had a chance to, like, you know, take his wife for a test drive or whatever.
Test drive.
And they're just
No, that was the maiden voyage.
That's true. It wasn't even. Yeah, he already bought it. It was the maiden.
Yeah, voyage. Maiden voyage, bro.
Yeah, so before he hadn't even got to do that yet, and then Fen Griffin Grandpa, he decides he's going to do that divine right of kings. They're not.
He's going to go prima nocta.
That's what
he's
I was just going to
go
say.
Prima nocta. That was back in the day where your lord said, "I'm getting it first."
Yeah.
And the reason why they did that back then is that they always wanted the damn lineage of the child to be questioned.
Yeah.
That way you wouldn't revolt against your landlord if that possibly could have been your father.
Yeah.
So it was to keep all that revolts into check, and you could get you some free stuff. Virgin.
Yeah.
You know? That shit was going back to into Scotland.
Yeah.
They were doing that. The British were doing that.
But yeah, so basically the grandpa rapes her.
Yeah.
And then she actually, you know, after she, because she's like freaking out screaming, obviously. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then like after that shit's over, she tries to attack him with an axe. Yeah. I was like, man, go girl.
Yeah, he rapes her and he's a dick about it.
Yeah. just to put a little cherry on top of the shit.
Yeah. He tries to pull this fucking divine right and her new husband, but what was his name? Finn what now?
Silas Senior.
He's like, those days are over. Says we don't do that anymore. That's not the law. And he's basically saying, I'm telling you what the law is.
Yeah, he's like, what the fuck?
He's with a gang of dudes. You know what I mean? Yeah. They beat his ass. They force it to happen. You know, they beat his ass up and shit. You know what I mean?
And then they drag him outside and cut his hand off.
Cut his hand off for fucking talking.
Hence
shit.
Hence the severed hand.
Yeah. Yeah, it was rude. It was very rude.
It was a tad rude. But they take him out and cut his hand off, because he tried to, actually he connected with the axe, I think, but he just got him in the shoulder or whatever. Yeah. So then
he fought back.
Yeah, so grandpa got a little pissed off and he said, "Okay, well I'm going to chop that hand off." So he chops the hand off, and at that point Silas Senior basically curses the Fengriffin family and is saying that the first virgin, I can't remember the exact curse, but it was something like the first virgin bride that comes to Fengriffin, they're going to be violated like my Sarah was, and you know, it's so the lineage, it's basically like ghost rape. He's basically saying like the curse is going to,
now when Silas was going to get his hand cut off, fucking his fucking lord said, fucking gave him the option. You can beg for mercy.
And he's like, nah, bro.
And he's like, spits on him. Fuck you.
I was like, man,
bam, and chopped his hands off. So they're letting you know that, you know, he had do or die willpower. You know what I mean? He had quite, you know, his honor content was high.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to beg for mercy, even if it cost him his hand.
And he didn't even yell when they cut his hand off.
No, and then he just put the hand in the damn bucket of water. And he's just going,
I'm so mad.
Yeah.
Well, he had all this, rightfully so.
He had all this psychic willpower, which could summon a curse. That's what they were talking about there.
Yeah. So basically, because Catherine, back in the present day, is, you know, suspected that something weird was going on, which is why, when she found out she was pregnant, she was really bummed because she was like, I don't want this baby. She even tried to like stab herself in the stomach at some point, but the severed hand prevented the knife from going all the way through.
Like a spiritual hand.
Yeah, because it was, well, the curse said that it's like no one could prevent it. Right. You know what I mean? That's why every time somebody tried to tell her what was going on, they would die. That like they would get killed. So finally at the end, like Dr. Pope says he's going to stay until the baby is born. And so he does. And she's like, really, because we're like, the first thing we thought, we're like, that she's going to give birth to a severed hand. I'm like, wow. That'd be really fucked up if that happened. I was like, I kind of like that idea.
I thought it was going to be a little baby hand coming
out. A little baby hand. Yeah. That would have been a little weird. But yeah, so she does actually end up having a baby. Now, they don't like show it to you right away. You can kind of guess like what probably is going to happen with it. But she has the baby, and you know, you hear the baby crying, and then the husband comes in and looks into the cradle, at which point I was like, what have you done to its eyes? You know what I mean? Because it was kind of that kind of moment.
Yeah.
And so he looks in there and he's like, oh, fuck no. And he like runs out of there. And then, you know, so finally Peter Cushing comes and gives her the baby and she looks at it. And I was like, it's going to have a birthmark, like Silas's birthmark.
Yeah.
And it did. And so it has this big birthmark. Yeah. And not only that, but it has like a little teeny stump. It doesn't have a hand. I was like, I didn't expect him to go there.
You missed a cool part of the story, though. When the dude saw the baby and shit, he freaks out and he runs down to the cemetery.
I was going to say that.
Cracks open the damn
His grandfather's grave. Because he was the one that was responsible.
Yeah, and you see the body and it's this fucking
the skeleton.
Decayed, it was a skeleton.
Yeah.
With jerky on it. You know what I mean? Fucking, and it's all white and rotted. He pulled it out. Fucking.
It was so great.
Breaking the shit up.
Motherfucker! Yeah, yeah. This is how much I hate my grandfather. I'm going to like take his fucking corpse and sling it all
Cushing,
over. Fucking...
Cushing was trying to stop it with his cheekbones and shit. Fuck you, you know what I mean? Don't do it. Don't do it. You know what I mean? And, he, and it happens to him and he's like, oh.
And then he was like, that's some sacrilegious shit right there. But I get you.
He had the buckle on his black helmet, a black helmet, black hat, everything looking damn in his pilgrim outfit with the fucking
it was
cloak
very, it was kind of cool. Yeah. He did look very cool. He had, like I said, he had some fucking badass outfits in this.
Good clothes.
But I also, I was going to point that because that was probably my favorite moment of the whole movie when Charles goes to his grandfather's crypt or his tomb, rather. Yeah. And breaks it open with a fucking axe or whatever, and then pulls that body, and he's just like, fucking, god damn it, fuck. Like, you ruined everything.
Yeah.
Because now I have, like, this weird-ass baby that's, like, fathered by a ghost, apparently. I mean, because he's got, so the baby has the birthmark and doesn't have a little hand. I also liked, too, when Peter Cushing hands her the baby, and she just, like, looks at it and, like, kind of hands it back, and Tom's like, I don't want that.
No, I don't want that. That's what it sounded like.
It fit
the image.
It really did. That's why it made me laugh so hard because it's not that old.
Yeah.
It was just like so fucking funny. But here you take it.
Yeah.
But so this is I actually really enjoyed this movie. You liked it too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of like a it delivered, it was visual. The sets, costume was good. Acting is really good. The cast is good. Real good, actually. The story was like something that you'd hear from, you know, English, Irish, Scottish folklore, you know, something like that, you know. It sounds like it feels kind of like it's something legendary. Is this a retelling of
based on a novel, but the novel is from like 1970 or 1970. Okay. So it's like a recent novel, but it's a gothic novel.
Yeah,
it was set in the 1790s.
It feels like it's something more like from, you know, the 1700s or the 1800s, you know.
It's all curses and you know, curses of the fathers like into the next generation.
My only complaint about it is that it's good as it is. But it would have competed a lot better, I think, against a Hammer film, which is what it was trying to do, if it had more boobs.
Yeah.
It did need them.
Because there was really there's one main woman in it.
Yeah.
And she had, like, a couple of servants, and then in the flashback, you know, Silas Sr.'s wife, they showed her for a few minutes.
But it's obvious what it is they're trying to do. They're trying to compete with Hammer. You got to match Hammer in the sex appeal era of fucking quotient that Hammer had, and it doesn't quite have that sex appeal that Hammer had.
Yeah, it's more
straight up and regular
gothic.
I think maybe
story.
They were trying. Maybe what it was is they were like, we want to compete with Hammer, but we don't really agree with that skin flick kind of approach that they're adding into there. You know, it's just going to be good quality and stories. And
yeah, maybe they wanted
more,
to class
more,
it up
more.
A little.
Yeah, it might be that we're going to do a little more conservative, which, no, that's not what I would have done in the 70s. Hell no.
Yeah. Well,
if anything, I'd have been more outrageous than Hammer. But I'm American.
Yeah.
And, you know, big difference between the mentality of a modern American and a British studio of that era.
Yeah.
Maybe they thought the market would be better responsive if it was a little more conservative.
Well, maybe because, like I said, because I think that Hammer had started to go downhill at that point, even though they were doing more and more lurid.
Maybe they thought they were getting, maybe they saw it go more lurid and they thought there was diminishing response.
That's what I was,
so they were going to take it back.
Back to the more classic time.
Because,
like I said, Amicus, this wasn't usually the type of movie they did. I don't think they did any other full-length gothic movies. They did a movie back in 1966, I think, called The Skull, and that had a little bit of a gothic thing just like in the prologue part, but I think the rest of it was kind of set in contemporary times. Almost all of their movies were set in contemporary times, and almost all of their movies were anthologies. So if you really like a lot of the Amicus anthology movies, I think Severin just put a bunch of them out, like that releasing company, and this is kind of on one. I think they did like a big pack that was like the Amicus, like big set or whatever. And, but it's, so if you like those and you want to see kind of their take on a different genre, it's kind of Amicus doing Hammer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, this is actually a pretty good one. And, honestly, yeah, I really, really liked it. I liked the whole mystery aspect. I didn't really figure out what was going on exactly. Kind of kept me interested, you know, and it's a lot of good acting in it. The cast seemed like smaller a bit than a Hammer film. More contained.
It needed two or three more attractive women in the cast. You didn't have to do all the fucking things like the boob thing, but there should have been more attractive women in the cast. I think it would have been better.
Yeah, it did. Like I said, it did seem like a more contained story in the sense that there were fewer characters, fewer right. locations, that kind of stuff. Because you could tell Amicus didn't have quite as much money and power as maybe Hammer had. Budget. Yeah, because I think Amicus tried to do stuff like on lower end. That's why they didn't do a lot of period pieces, because they're generally more expensive to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, this, like I said, if you're in the US and maybe in the UK, I'm not really sure, but they Shudder just added a whole bunch of Amicus movies not too long ago. And this is on there as well, along with Asylum's on there, Beast Must Die's on there. There's a bunch of different ones if you want to check them out. But yeah, this is totally a good one. So if you're into 70s British horror, then by all means, check it out. And we'll see you on the next one. Bye.